Yeah, I think, hey, GUIs are DEI.
Yeah. Can you please?
That would probably be a good title.
That is a good title. That eats.
I'm going to see if that works. So, how was Afrotech last week?
10 out of 10. It was all about the culture. I have no complaints whatsoever. 10 out of 10. Okay, so when I first heard about Afrotech, I wanted to go. And then people started talking bad about it. So then I was like, I don't want to go. And so I'm glad that I actually went and got my own perspective on what things are actually going to be like. It is absolutely for the culture, and it is what you make it. If you go and you play around, then you're not going to get any value from it. If you go, if you're intentional, if you're talking to people, if you're attending workshops, you're making those connections, attending the sessions, going to the things that happen afterwards, and still being intentional, not just going in, still kind of being siloed. I kind of felt bad for people who maybe went by themselves, because that might make it more difficult for them, especially if you like are not a social person, right? It may feel awkward to you to see everybody kind of mingling and interacting, but I had a ball. It was a really good time. I made a lot of great connections. I went to some great sessions. I really enjoyed myself thoroughly.
That's good. People's like, hey, you here? Because, like, the funny thing is, so, you know, there's Afrotech. There's Afrotech events. Then there's the, if you know somebody important, those events.
Yep.
So a lot of my friends that I've met through pod and stuff, they were at the good events.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you here? I was like, man, nah, man, maybe next year. And that's why I kept on telling you, like, yo, hey, you ran into this person, because...
I saw a lot of people. The expo hall is where I was seeing a lot of people. I mean, that's going to be the best spot. If you see people during a session, that's not the best time to try to chat with them, because they kind of are back-to-back in an essence, like, you know, or you might need to go from this spot to a different location within the venue, but... A lot of the people that I was able to connect with and just kind of have a good conversation with was in the expo hall. That's where I was running into people. Or also, like, there's a whole bunch of restaurants on that, you know, the little strip or whatever. So obviously in between those sessions, people were grabbing food. So I was able to see some people there as well. But the expo hall is a really good place, because if you're there at the right time, you might see the right people.
Yeah. So did you... And you can tell me if this is TMI, but did you stay in the hotel where the event was?
No. But I was close. I was close in the vicinity, though. Okay. Yeah.
I think if I
was in walking distance. Everybody I knew was in walking distance. Yeah.
I think if I go back, I would book early and just have my stuff there.
I'm glad I didn't book, because I was going to book the hotel that was connected to the venue, but it's too much. It's just too congested for me. Yeah.
Or something close, because, like, if we go, I want to shoot.
Oh, facts.
So we could probably knock out so many, like, 5-6 episodes.
I'll tell you where I stayed. It was in a reasonable distance.
I'm trying to see, is it, like, it's in, I wonder if it's close to where, because I seen some of the stuff was in the Ion.
The Ion's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Ion's
cute. That's where
really
we
cute.
Had, like, the Blackest Tech stuff, and then I forgot what hotel I stayed in Houston, but it was really nice. I had I felt like I was ghost. I had like a corner, for real, I had a corner room. It was like really big. I think I showed you.
Yeah. Oh, you did. You
yeah,
sent
so
me a
like,
video.
I would love to, I don't know how far away.
I think that's far away.
You think so?
Yeah. That's more further away than you want. You want to be in walking distance. If you have to drive, you want to be like a 5-minute drive away.
When I go to Houston, I leave my car in valet the whole time.
Because valet was too crazy. Self-park me. Thank you.
Well, you know, when you're there, sometimes they be breaking into your cars and stealing your wheels.
No, they do. But I parked at the self-park place was across. It was kind of like diagonal from my hotel. But I think self-park was like $52 a day.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. And then you still gonna take time to bring me my car. It's crazy.
But at the same time, it don't matter if it's $52 a day if it's not your $52.
You're right. You're right about that.
When I went to Austin, everything went on that corporate Amex.
Yeah.
And I stayed at the Omni. I stayed at the Omni in Austin. That's where I stayed at.
Yeah, there are a couple of hotels. I didn't know that. There are a couple of hotels that are connected to the venue. I just thought it was just one. But one of my friends, they stayed there. It's convenient. Obviously, you literally walk out your hotel and you, boom, you're right in the middle of things. But if you need to get out of there, that's what I'm talking about. If you need to leave,
that's
the part where it gets a little congested.
And that's the whole reason why I would just leave my stuff in Valet, walk back to where I need to be, leave early.
But like, if you stay there, I mean, that's a one-stop shop. The block party location right across the street from the hotel.
Because I think in Austin, it was connected to the big Hilton with the convention center. Mm. So, like, it definitely was like booming on the first floor. Everybody at all the restaurants and talking and stuff. So it's cool. I ain't gonna lie though. Even though I know that with Afrotech, I think it's good as in Houston because, you know, they're doing it because
I heard it's gonna be there for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Well, 3 years.
I can see Houston. I can see ATL.
Atlanta would be crazy.
But you know what
would
be even.
But where would they have? I don't know Atlanta like that.
But you know what actually would work, but I don't know as far as affordability. Vegas.
Or Vegas or Cali is crazy.
Well, you got to think about it. Vegas does a lot of those.
They do a lot of conventions in it. I mean, they have a lot of conferences, really large conferences there.
So they're used to it. They can accommodate.
Yeah.
You know, in Vegas, you really don't even have to leave the hotels because they got everything. All restaurants and stuff is all there. So that's why I said it could be fun.
Yeah. I think where it's at, though, in Houston is the perfect location because you can walk and go get food. You can walk and go just do something different. You don't have to stay, like, in that little pocket right there. But, yeah, I love Houston. Afrotech was really fun. And I think people should go get their own experiences. Don't believe the hype. Go see for yourself, for real.
Yeah. And then, you know, while she was having fun at Afrotech, we did, like, a quick little – I guess I didn't even call it a staycation, but, like, it's a new – not super new, but it's a hotel that's built in Frisco off Main Street that we stayed at. And – We took the kids to the main event.
Of course, how was they?
Josh can't play because he's small, so he's watching. But they got the bowl.
They did.
Yeah, they was getting the straw. I forgot to put the bumpers up for them.
That ain't no fun.
No, we did it towards the end, but I forgot. Like I didn't know how to do it, but I think they really enjoyed themselves. We got to play some games, and our freaking Saturday kind of got a little bit messed up because of it took Josh to the emergency room.
Josh.
Yeah, pink eye. So.
Oh, he's good. He feeling good.
Yeah, he fine. I mean, Natalie had it, gave it to her mama, and then Josh had it. The only people that didn't have it is me and Zelly. So.
Not y'all. Stranger danger. Stay away.
Well, I don't know. Well, Zelly's always by Josh. I'm always by Josh. But it's like, you know, if somebody got pink eye, just make sure you just wash your hands and don't really touch the stuff that they use until they get over it with their drops.
It's just annoying because it just be so gunky and crusty. And then he's so little. He can't, you know, relieve himself of that.
He only had one bad night, and that was, like, Friday night. Mm-hmm. But after that, his eye wasn't really crusty anymore. Yeah. It just was, like, probably discharged a little bit. But
how was Halloween?
It was good. They had to be there. Natalie was a witch. Zelly was Bluey, of course. Josh was supposed to be Chucky. But let me see. You'll probably even laugh when I say it. But the thing was, his costume, it was too big. And I was just like,
really? I didn't dress up. I went out with some of my friends still in Houston, but Halloween was cool. Halloween's one of my favorite holidays, but if it's up to me, I would prefer to spend it at a haunted house or something like that. Not really necessarily at a club. that's so cute. but yeah, I wish I would have went to some haunted houses or something like that. When I was down there, just to get a different experience. But, yeah. All in all,
I think,
good time.
These were their pumpkins that we did.
Oh, that's cute. That's Bluey.
That's Bluey. This is the one I carved, and then Giselle painted over it.
Period. Tell her that's me. That's cute.
Peppa, and then this is Josh's.
Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. I know my stuff.
But all in all, it was cool. It was a little laid back weekend. I didn't feel like being at the house too much, you know. Got to eat some food.
I don't know. I wanted to do like a, because I've been, you know, I'm a TikToker. I love TikTok. I saw like people making scary looking Halloween treats. So I wanted to do some of that. But obviously, if you go on the week of, ain't no time to do that when you get back. It's over. It's November. Mm-hmm. But I did want to make like some of those pies that look real horrible.
Horrible. Interesting. But let's go ahead and intro the pod real quick, guys. Welcome back to episode 194 of the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got Cyber Shorty in the building with us today.
Hey, y'all.
I know a lot of y'all saw Cyber Shorty last week because y'all kept on texting me. I just seen Cyber Shorty, you know. I was like,
they weren't saying nothing either.
I was like, ooh, we got celebrity on our hands, y'all.
They weren't saying nothing.
But nah, man, appreciate y'all. If y'all still watching with us right now, y'all know what to do. Hit the like button, thumbs up, hype up the video. And if you're listening in your car right now, leave us a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any of the podcast streaming platforms you choose to listen to. But yeah, it's been, what, like 2 weeks?
It's been too long. I'm low-key mad we didn't get to film last week, but we back and we better.
Yeah, that was it's 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks.
I think it's just a lot of moving parts. As you guys can see, we're adding stuff to the space. I got some more stuff coming. So, you know, in the comments, if y'all like what we're doing, let me know. I'll say, if y'all want to donate, I'll leave a link in there and y'all can donate.
Absolutely.
If y'all watching the premiere, just leave us a super thanks, a super chat, whatever you do. We'll use your donation to get some stuff for the, you know, for the show. But I wanted to start off with another interesting topic. A little context, guys. My baby brother got his first IT internship in college, and he is now learning about working in corporate and dressing business casual. And I thought that was an interesting topic because business casual, the lines are blurred. It also could be based on what company you work at. It could be a lot of different things. I know, like, last night, Giselle's trying to go back and forth from me with that jeans aren't business casual. I said, jeans literally define the term of casual in business casual.
That is the casual in business casual.
And she was like, no, it's not. And I was like, well, just because schools and stuff, you know, that's what they do. I'm telling you, it's casual. Literally, I was like, if you work the number amount of white men I worked at, 9 out of 10, they're going to be in some jeans at work in a big polo shirt.
I was just about to say, with a little vest on, a little vest.
But, so, business casual, what is it? Typically, I was thinking about getting some mirror to put over there.
I'm looking the definition
up. I was thinking about getting some mirror to put over there, so, like, check your fit and stuff when it's recording day. But I typically dress business casual. It's very versatile. You don't know if I'm going to a doctor's appointment with my kids, if I'm going to go lunch or dinner, if you don't know if I'm going to work or interview. That's how I like to dress because it's versatile and it's age appropriate for myself right now. There are times when I'm in my sweats or, you know, sometimes I see my graphic tees or something I wear on there. It's only because I want to be comfortable when I'm podding. But typically, me, I'm in a textured,
That's a nice shirt. That's a nice shirt, a nice business casual shirt. This is a great example of a business casual shirt. I'm not really a fan of it. And when it calls for it, if there's a dress code, I will follow the dress code. But on my own, I'm going to be more casual than business. And if I don't have anything going on, I don't see the cause for me to bring out the more business side of it. But if I know that something is going on, then I'll put on the appropriate clothes. But I feel like business casual means different things at different companies. Like, I've worked at companies where business casual was jeans, but you couldn't wear sneakers. Or I've worked at places where you couldn't wear jeans, so you had to do, like, a kind of, like, some chinos or, like, black jeans, right, that aren't denim, basically. When they say jeans, I'm thinking blue jeans, right?
Yeah.
So I think it is at the discretion. It is at the discretion of your company because they'll have the policy and it'll tell you what is business casual and what is not, so you know.
Yeah.
But I think that as time goes on, the lines become a little bit blurred. And I think that women are able to finesse it a little bit more than men are because we have more things that we can wear. Like, men don't wear shorts, right? When you think of business,
I would never think about wearing shorts to work.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But women can wear a skirt. They can wear a dress. They can wear pants, they can wear a capri, like, they can wear different things. So I feel like we have more options as opposed to, like, you can have on your jeans. I mean, not your jeans. You have some bottoms and a top on if you're a man. So I think the lines are very crazy these days. But when we were coming up, business casual was no sneakers, right? If you could wear a sneaker, that was explicitly stated. So you knew. You know what I mean?
You could finesse. So.
Well, and the sneaker is important too.
I was going to say, so it's a couple of things about that. For my people that grew up going to, like, a black church or whatever, business casual is kind of like how you would dress going to church.
Absolutely.
But some people, that They wear all types of things.
It's different these days.
Back in the day, you would have caught me in like a button down, some jeans, and some like white Air Force Ones. You can kind of finesse that depending on how your shirt look. That could be considered business casual based on what you got. For me, either some khakis or like you said, some chinos, like some Kohan tennis shoes. The shoes is what's going to determine what it is.
The shoe is going to make it be urban quickly.
Now, if you want to finesse it, throw some jeans with some dress shoes and a blazer. You straight.
Or a blazer, jeans, and some sneakers. You still can get away with it. But I think it depends. And then I think if you... I pay attention to kind of stuff like that across different cultures. Things are different. Mm-hmm. Like, I started a job before, and there were a lot of folks that were from Asia, and they had, like, crop tops on. And I was like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that. But there's cultural differences. They're literally not from here. That may be how they dress over there. And so based on culture, so what I'm seeing now is that a lot of people who are not necessarily brown skin are wearing Air Forces, and that's their everyday work shoe with anything. Doesn't matter what it is. So that didn't used to be the case, right?
Yeah, nah.
It Chucks used to be real popular. Vans used to be. Yeah, the Vans with no shoestrings.
You know what would be cool? And it might be spur of the moment to ask you this, but if you got a chance, if you want to send in some of your past business casual outfits, mm-hmm. we could probably put them right here. I'm going to try to, because, like, for me, I actually like, so guys, I know you have like.
I'm going to push the envelope. I'm not going to. So don't look to me for business casual advice, because I am not the right person. I'm going to wear what I think is business casual.
Yeah.
But again, if I'm going somewhere and I need to put on a suit, dress pants, heels, I'm going to put it on. But on a day to day, don't ask me for no advice, because I'm gonna wear what I want to wear.
Nah, for sure. Yeah. I think so. I will say, for guys, especially black men, a lot of what's going to also look acceptable is going to be your appearance, and that also means
haircut,
hairstyle,
yep,
all the different stuff, your skin,
if you got a haircut, your beard,
earrings, all the type of stuff. So for me, I'm typically fade, waves. I used to do the goatee from time to time back in the day, but now strictly just the beard eventually.
I just asked my homeboy this the other day. I was like, what is your stance on facial hair? And I ask a lot of black men this. And it's difficult because they're further in their careers. They're not just starting out. But everybody did tell me, every black man, that when they interviewed, they were clean cut. And men with full beards. And I was like, well, why? And they were like, well, you know, that's what you got to do. You get what I'm saying.
Yeah, some people try to go clean shaven. I'm gonna just keep it honest.
But it's not for everybody, especially if you're like us. Like, that can irritate your face, your skin. If you don't do it on a regular and you just go shave.
That's a whole nother probably like a intro, like how to teach guys how to actually shave correctly with like clippers. What to put on your face.
Just good skincare.
What to do after you get a haircut.
Yeah.
But for me, it's typically this. So sometimes I'll let my beard go lower. That way it'll look like it's been cut longer if I got to, like, line it up real quick before an interview or something like that. But you can't trust a guy don't have no facial hair. Only people that get an exception of the rule is, like, military or, like, people that work for the fire department or police department.
Well, I'm talking about men that got full, and I, like, yes, you're full, but I mean, like, long.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
No, I did that long. After I had a job before, but you typically find, like, white guys, they typically had that.
And they do be long.
They interview with, like, all type of stuff. And that's, you know what? We need to bring a recruiters on, or recruiters. I'm like, yo, what's the wildest thing you saw a candidate come on the Zoom or in person wearing?
Yeah.
That's going to be a funny segment. But to give them just some easy things that they can wear. You can go regular crew necks. Like, I know y'all
Okay.
I know y'all be trying to boycott Target, but Goodfellas crew necks, elite. So you can go like regular crew neck with different colors, you know, like your burgundies, your like tans, blues, greens, all the different stuff. Or you can go with like some of that textured type of crew necks where you can kind of dress it up some. And then you can mix match different chinos, khakis, dark brown, burgundy, green. And I was also telling my brother, like, pay attention to the seasons, and that's how you can kind of figure out what you want your stuff to be. And then your same thing with your shoes, some type of tennis shoes. I used to get away, well, not really get away, but My things used to be back in the day, it sometimes would be like a polo shirt, some jeans, and then depending on the weather, I might wear some Sperry's. Right?
So Sperry's used to eat down. See, times have changed. Times have changed.
I still got my Sperry's.
No, but you do, especially as a man, you do have to have an appropriate shoe, a more casual sneaker. Like you said, like a Cole Haan is perfect because you can wear that to work. You can leave work and go somewhere after work and, you know, it still be an appropriate look.
Yeah. And they don't really got to be Cole Haan. They could be any type of shoe that kind of look like that.
Like the ones that kind of look like Chucks, but they're not Chucks. Yeah. They're like colored. You know what I'm talking about? I don't even know what they call it.
Most department stores got their own type of house brand.
Yeah.
So, for example, like Macy's, one of their brands is Alfani. And I had some Alfani shoes that's kind of like these Cole Haans. I used to wear them a lot to when I was working like at Goldman Sachs. And I used to get compliments on them. One guy thought those shoes cost way more than what they did. So it ain't about what you got on you.
I think you could also, there should also be some staples. Like you could do some loafers. You could do like, get you a good loafer that you can wear on the regular more frequently. I think that'll be a good idea. And then you also have a boot. Like, it's going to get cold. So some sort
definitely.
Of little Chelsea boot. Little Chelsea boot.
I got some zip-ups. But, yeah, definitely get your boots. I mean, also, what y'all had that we didn't have, y'all got TikTok. It's a lot of guys that do fashion on TikTok and YouTube. They can literally help you get your style together.
Yeah.
Or the ultimate cheat code is get your significant other. That's better in the fashion than you, and let them pick your clothes out.
That too.
But even though you didn't give the ladies any tips.
I was trying not to go down that rabbit hole because it'd be a lot going on.
Do it based on if it's not you. Like, not do as I do.
Yeah, yeah.
So get them that based on like.
Okay, so for me, I grew up in a Baptist church. So when we were going to church back in the day, long denim skirts type of situation. And if you were dressed inappropriately, they were going to tell you that you were dressed inappropriately. So for me, if I feel any insecurity with the outfit, like, should I wear it? I'm not wearing it, period. If there's any question about, that's personally me. If I feel like I have to ask, is this too short? This too short, if you have to ask. It's hard. I think women should definitely have a blazer in their closet. I actually hate blazers. I told you that. I texted you on a Friday and was like, man, I got this blazer. I'm looking like somebody auntie all day. That's not really me. But I have them for when they're needed. Blazers are good. I think nice black dresses, black slacks, navy slacks are always good, and just your basic tops. Like, I know we want to be full of personality and things like that at work, but you still need to make sure you have those staples. And that'd be a lot of the issue when you're trying to find something to wear is you don't have any staples. Like, you have all of these personality pieces, and so when it's time to go put something together, you're like, dang, I don't even got a basic black shirt or a basic white shirt, just like you said, a turtleneck. The basics are what you should start with, and then you can, you know, start to mix and match those.
I got two things, and it'll be funny. Guys, if you remember our guest, Abdi, he's been on the show 2 or 3 times now. Go check out Abdi.
Go look at my boy,
Abdi. If you're
Abdi.
A young man and you want to be taken more seriously. If you want to take more seriously, go check out what Abdi, always suited and booted, dressed to the nines. You know what I'm saying? They probably think he older than what he is.
Yeah.
Now, here's a funny one that I thought about, and I chuckled inside in my inner thoughts before I let this go. Can you tell what type of job a woman has based on what she wear to work?
No.
You don't think so?
Absolutely not.
I think I got a hot take here. I think you can.
I don't think you can.
I know how to tell who work in corporate and who in call centers.
How?
Most call center women, they dress a certain way. They definitely going to have on some tight sundresses.
Women in corporate do too.
We even settling up. I ain't never seen nobody wearing a sundress that you shouldn't wear to work into my job.
Oh, you mean you talking about to work?
Yeah.
Oh,
I ain't talking about you. Talking about like what you wearing at work.
At work. I thought you were talking about outside.
Like when I worked over, it's a building in the back, JPMC back there. They had a big campus, so I knew what building was actually like that call center campus.
Mm-hmm.
They was dressed very differently from us that was in the back buildings that made more money. So I already knew what type of job they possibly did.
I'm trying to think about when I was in the call center. But we had a real strict dress code. No, we didn't. We didn't have a dress code. We didn't have one. I was wearing crew necks and hoodies and, like all of that.
Yeah, because you have to think about it. In that job, there's really no upward mobility. Like, you don't care. You're just happy you got a job for the most part.
I'm trying to think about when I was in claims, too. I feel like it was more of a dress code there. More of a, like, but I think the environment also impacts it, too. So, like, if you go into office and people look nice, you naturally want to look nice.
Mm-hmm.
If you go in and people got on scarves and bonnets, you don't really care.
Yeah, but funny thing is, though, most of the time at help desk or call center, you're going to see the most black people.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I might pull that tweet up somewhere. But yeah, guys, y'all let us know in the comments what y'all think about business casual, how y'all feel about dressing. I know that a lot of people like to be remote and here's the other thing too. When companies say, hey, return to office, you don't know people living situation. Do they have clothes even come to work?
They don't, because we have not, for the most part, if you've been remote, especially since COVID started, why would you have the clothes?
I'm even saying before.
Or can you even fit them? Number one.
So, do you think, and before we got to the topic, do you think jobs should say, hey, guys, we know some of you might not have no clothes, but if you want to, you can wear a uniform to work?
No.
Like your company, like.
Absolutely not.
For your company color, that'd be fire.
I am such an individualist. That would literally make me crash out. I'd never.
But see, I wore uniforms in high school.
No.
And middle school.
I hate the idea of uniforms. For kids, cool. For an adult, absolutely not.
Man, that's fire.
No.
I think it's
fire. Like, if there was, okay, so you know how people in the medical field wear scrubs. If there was something like that, a whole situation.
That's what I'm saying. You ain't got to have your company name on it. What's it going to be? Colors. Khaki, look.
Scrubs?
Hey, guys, join the Patreon if you want to hear a saying. I got a saying about Navy on Navy, but I'm not going to tell y'all online because I'm changed. You got Navy on Navy, white on khaki, baby blue or powder blue on Navy.
But I'm saying, like, what would it be? Just throw out a uniform. Like, what?
It'd be a simple uniform. You'll have, like, an Oxford shirt on with some dress pants and whatever shoes. But at least you can wear that, and you won't have to worry about having a new fit. And you know how a lot of women are. Man, I can't repeat my outfits. Like, all different type of stuff. So that's why you got to get different bottoms, and you can wear the same shirt with different bottoms. It's a new outfit. Listen. I'm telling you, because
I do. Okay, I think that it would be nice to have company shirts so it can be less of an issue for you sometimes when you're getting dressed. So let's say you start somewhere and you get 3 to 5 shirts. That's easy for you to rotate and cycle through. I'm not saying you have to wear all 5 of those each week, but if needed, whenever needed. Like, let's say, for example, you work somewhere and they're like, 2 days out the week, you got to wear a company shirt. Well, at least you got 5 of them to choose from.
Yeah. And like I said, I work with people that I've seen them rotate the same stuff every other day, and I'm like, ain't no way you watched that last night.
That buddy. Part.
And I could tell. So I'm just going to leave it at that. It's like, it's a whole bunch of other things why some people would prefer to be remote that I agree with. If they can do the job, but they're more comfortable being at home because of life situations, let them work from home. That's what I'm on. Now, I think I'll let you go because I drove that business casual one because I knew I wanted to bring it up because it was recently on my mind.
Okay. I kind of want to talk about, is it important to have a backup? In terms of, okay, so back in the day, you went to college,
mm-hmm.
you got a job, you worked that job, you retired from that job. You never really worried about getting laid off unless you did something intentional, right? You made a big mistake or you violated company policy or something. That's not the reality anymore. So is it important for you to have a backup plan and meaning? Are you leaning into your interest or other things that can bring you income versus solely relying on that one source? And the older that I get and the more that I become exposed to this industry and just some of the different fluctuations that we've experienced, I do think it's important that people start thinking about what life looks like if you don't have this job anymore. And how you could potentially, and everybody's not meant to be a business person, and I'm not saying that. I'm not saying go start a company, you bring it in $10 million a year, but just being able to bring in something does help.
Yeah. And to be totally honest, I think that this is where it benefits you to go to school, because we know a lot of these jobs, that even if they aren't tech related, let's say you want to go work for the city sometimes, or the school system, or wherever you want to work, at a hospital or something, they'll say, hey, you need a degree. So at least if you already have a degree, you've got that if you're trying to transition over to a new field. Now, the benefit is also when you say strategy. I take me, for example. When I got out of school in 2013 and I had to go back to Target, I was like, if I don't land nothing by such and such date, I'm going to hit my family up and you like say, hey, when is the next academy date for getting into the fire department? Because I knew that's something I could do. And I also knew with my degree that I also get paid more than some of the other people, because they reward you for having a degree. You would get like, I think, 500 more a shift or something like that. I forgot what it was. But that was going to be my backup plan. I'll say, or I could go. It was just another. I could have also, since I had the degree, I was at Target. I had worked there for 3 years through college. I could have became an ETL. And for people that don't know what that is, that's the executive team leader. They're the people that's over the team leads. And so they're the ones that get the pretty much the six figures working in retail in Target. So I knew I could have did that. I knew, hey, I can get $70,000, $80,000 from Target if I apply to this ETL position, since I've been here for so long. So I kind of had worked out these different things if something didn't work. So, but those were my, you know, plan
B, C, 1B.
No, I wasn't even that. It's everything is, you know, plan A, plan A, B, A, B, A, B, A, B, C, whatever you want to call it. So that's what that was. But I agree, though. A lot of people don't. And then that's the reason why.
And that, and then when the time comes, and you now you're starting to try to figure it out. And sometimes you got to have, you got to invest some money into starting whatever that is. But if you try to start that in the midst of the crisis, when you're trying to keep the money that you don't, you're not bringing in anymore, I just think that people should maybe consider alternative things that they can do to bring in income if push does come to shove, because things aren't the same. We're not promised to retire from the companies that we work at like we were 25 years ago.
Yes, no, that's facts. And I would say that, and that's why it's important to pay attention to what you even get a degree in.
Oh, absolutely. Why nobody told me not to get that degree in criminal justice?
Well, when they say that, I always ask people, I say, what you plan to do with that? What do you plan to do with kinesiology? What do you plan to do with these degrees? Because you're spending all this time studying this stuff, and then you can't really get a job after it. And that's why I'm on my baby sister right now, because she's a senior, and she's thinking about, she don't know what she want to really major in yet. And I said, yeah, I know it's hard for, you know, hey, right now she's 17, for a 17-year-old to figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life.
It is hard.
But this is going to take some research. I've been trying to also, you know, get her, like I'm saying, hey, look, I stay down the street for UNT. Don't try to keep it strictly to Louisiana, because you have to think about what happens after you graduate and what opportunities you may have. So I've been telling her, hey, look in some of these schools out here. I know that she don't want that. And it's one of the things where, you know, a lot of kids, they want to go to school with their friends. And I'm like,
I did not go to school with my friends, and it worked out for me. I knew if I went to Michigan State, I was going to flunk. I knew it. And when I went and did the college tour, the campus was way too big.
Yeah.
As soon as we got off the bus, I was like, I'm not going here. This I'm going to crash out up here. Like, yeah. It's not going to be conducive to my education.
Yeah. And then, like, I think, you know, you just got to think about after school, and what's good for them may not be good for you.
No, facts.
And
facts.
So that's the thing I've been trying to drive home to her. I was the same way. Like, I pretty much was the one that stuck to it and said, I'm going to LA Tech. I had some friends that they came there, but the people that came initially, like, with me together, they ended up doing different things. One went to the military. One, I don't even know where my boy at now, but I knew regardless I was going to stay there because that was the best spot for me because of affordability. It was like an hour and 15 minutes away from home. If I need to catch a ride, I can get home. Like, it was a whole bunch of stuff that I actually planned that out. And while I'm talking, this is another reason why a lot of boys, and I can't say girls, are not really equipped to be adults, is because their parents are doing everything for them.
Going to college make you figure out how to have conversations, because the first conversation you need to have is with financial aid. And everybody done had something happen with their financial aid. So if you don't know how to resolve and use those skill sets to get yourself out of situations and to figure things out, because it's you. If you don't figure out why the payment not there or why the money isn't there,
listen,
stuff like that. I agree with you 1,000%. percent. College is not just about the education. It's about growing as well because you are exposed to some of those different things. My first
quarter, based on my mom and them being black, and I did bad my first quarter because I didn't have all my finances right. I couldn't get some of my books. And so it was rough, but I was like, I'll come out top. You know, if you need to get your GPA up, take something like bowling. I think I took a class called Reading 200. Reading 200 got my GPA up there. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
You do. You absolutely do. I think that I was going back to the criminal justice thing. There's nothing wrong with having a criminal justice degree, but it's just like, what are you doing with it? And for me and what I wanted to do, I didn't need the degree. So I wish that people would have been like, oh, well, did you think about this or did you think about that? Because at the time I wanted to go to law school, so why are you not majoring in law? Like, make it make sense.
Yeah, nah, for sure. But definitely have a backup plan. It always helps. Just do your research. Look at the trends. Use the, what is it called? It's the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Yeah.
Use that to kind of look at trends where you see spending at. And we got an article that's coming up that's actually going to talk about, like, some jobs that may, like, survive, like, the AI push. But before we get into that, one of the more interesting things that I want to talk about was there's a company called Signia, and pretty much they are a cybersecurity firm. They pretty much help companies recover from cybersecurity incidents. And in this case, they had – actually, it's two people involved. But in this case, this guy's name is – and I bookmarked it, but I got an article that kind of goes more in-depth on it because I found a cool new site to – well, new – what's it called? A new profile to follow on X. What's the guy's name? His name is Ryan Clifford Goldberg. And a digital forensics and incident response manager at Signia, he is one of the three insiders accused of cyber crimes. He allegedly conducted cyber attacks using Alpha Black Cat ransomware. Goldberg and two other insiders ran ransomware operations since 2023 while employed at cybersecurity firms. After an FBI visit, Goldberg confessed he now faces up to 50 years in prison.
50? They giving him the hammer.
I mean, you know what's funny?
But I think that people, especially when you look like us, you tell somebody that I work in cybersecurity, right? First thing they think is you're a hacker, right? Mm-hmm. And then first thing they start asking is stupid questions. And you have to have a lot of integrity and strong ethics to work in cybersecurity.
No, facts. That's one of the first things you have to do.
No, it's and if you are somebody who is unethical, for the most part, that's how you live your life, this is not for you.
And the thing about this that makes it interesting is I want to keep up with this case as it unfolds is how are they doing this? Because like I said, technically he wasn't doing this at work. So when you want to have your insider threat programs or anything like that, that's typically for your environment, not for what you're doing outside.
Like, you're talking about insider risk.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why, like, it's really interesting because this gets to the point where companies now, a lot of people say, like, I'm being intrusive because you're trying to see what I'm trying to do too much, but I kind of understand because now their reputation is at risk. Hey, we hire these people that do things and conspire against other, like, we do stuff to the companies we help. And that's what I read from in this article, and I'm going to just touch on it, and then we could kind of get on to some more. Let's see. U.S. prosecutors have charged two rogue employees of a cybersecurity company that specializes in negotiating ransom payments to hackers on behalf of their victims with carrying out ransomware attacks on their own. Last month, the Department of Justice indicted Kevin Tyler Martin and another unnamed employee who worked as ransomware negotiators at Digital Mint, with three counts of computer hacking and extortion related to a series of attempted, that's the bad part, some of them ain't work, series of attempted ransomware attacks against at least five U.S.-based companies. Like, why go against companies in the U.S.? At least if you're going to do it, as Trump say, do it against China. Like, at least do it like that. Like, why would you go against your own companies? And you know it's always going to be a trail.
I think that's crazy. I'm lost for words on that. That is so stupid to me. It's so stupid. And then nobody's going to hire you. Nobody messing with you after that.
He ain't got to worry about being hired. He's going to be in jail.
Well, even still, even if you don't get a lot of time, No, I mean, he getting a lot of time. But if he don't, let's say he get 10 years, when you get out, you're going to still feel like you in there. You have this, what is it on you? What they call it when you judging them? Now you have these, people
I
have
these.
Talking
about too.
I can't
you
get
You talking about like a preconceived notion?
Yes. So people have these preconceived notions about you. It don't matter if you served your time. They're not going to be like, oh, he cool. No.
And he not going to be able to get any
nothing. Because you have to think about, and people don't realize this, like every felony isn't the worst felony you can have, right? Some felonies you still can get a job, but like stealing, murder, violent crimes, drug crimes, anything with money, mm-hmm. basically trust. Again, if a company can't trust you, why would they want to hire you?
Facts. Prosecutors also charged a third individual, Ryan Clifford Goldberg, a former incident response manager at cybersecurity giant Signia, as part of the scheme. The three are accused of hacking into companies, stealing their sensitive data, and deploying ransomware developed by the Alpha V Black Cat Group. The Alpha V Black Cat gang operates as a ransomware as a service model in which the gang develops the file encrypting malware used to steal and scramble the victim's data while its affiliates, such as the three individuals indicted, carry out the hacks and deploy the gang's ransomware. The gang then takes a cut of the profits made from any ransomware payments. According to an FBI affidavit filed in September, the rogue employees received more than $1.2 million in ransom payments from one victim, a medical device maker in Florida. They also targeted several other companies, including a Virginia-based drone maker and a Maryland-headquartered pharmaceutical company. The Chicago Sun-Times first reported the indictment on Sunday. These people, between the three of them, $1.2 million.
Why?
1.2. They could have did, but these people had expertise where they could have just made that. They just started their own companies.
That's what I'm saying about ethics. If you always thinking about that BS, if you always thinking about how you can get over on people, on things, how you can win your way, instead of starting a legitimate company and making the money legitimately, because clearly the skill set is there.
And I definitely want to talk to a person that does insider risk because I wonder if, based on what certain people do at a company, do they have strict monitoring on them for, like, the dark web or what their alias could be or what they doing or what they getting into? Because that's what I would probably do. Like, for people that do certain things, these people know the system. These would be it's like pretty much who polices the police. Mm-hmm. Like, the police and them know all the laws and how to get away with everything.
Insider risk is something that a lot of companies they're not necessarily accounting for.
Yeah.
Like, it's a thing, right? More at the end, like, oh, just take their access, you know, revoke their access, making that a part of the, you know, the access life cycle. But I think that especially in the use of AI, insider risk should be conversations.
Yeah, that's been happening, and I don't understand why people were letting people use ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude, or whatever with their possible company's sensitive information.
Well, it's because you probably don't have a solution in place to help you.
Well, most companies have pretty much got their own internal LOMs that they have been working on for the last 3 years. That's finally just, you know, been released for them to work on. So, let's see. Signia Chief Executive Guy Segal confirmed to TechCrunch that Goldberg was a Signia employee and was terminated after Signia learned of his alleged involvement with the ransomware attacks. The company declined to comment further, citing the FBI's ongoing investigation. Digital Mint President Mark Grins told TechCrunch that Martin was an employee at the time of the alleged hacks, but said Martin was acting completely outside the scope of his employment. Obviously. Grins also confirmed that the unnamed individual may be a former employee. Digital Mint is also cooperating with the government's investigation, said Grins. Yeah, man. I thought that was pretty, like, that's the type of stuff we watch TV shows on.
Facts.
Like, for real.
Absolutely. And I think that we also are in a less forgiving nation than others. When people get caught with some of those crimes in other countries, that country is sometimes like, hey, did you know that you could do this for good?
No, I actually think we are less forgiving.
No, that's what I'm saying. Here, in the U.S.
No, I mean, I actually think we are more forgiving.
Really?
If they was in Russia, off with their heads.
Well, it depends on the country, absolutely, because China not playing with that either.
That's what I'm saying. So why they didn't do that to them? Like, fam, why y'all... See, this is what I'm talking about, bro. Y'all be having all this expertise, and y'all be choosing the wrong U.S.-based companies. Y'all could have did it to the student loan people. Nobody would... Bro, everybody would... Y'all... Hey, listen. This is funny.
I wonder, do they have a good security team? True. Because everybody's always preying on the student loan.
They, you know, they got them dispersed for, like, different companies now. But this is...
Like Sally Mae, for example.
This is unrelated to it. But you seen the recent pictures of Luigi posted up in jail?
Mm-mm.
Luigi posted up. They said he'd been listening to King Von and stuff.
Can you please?
I promise to God, if you type in Luigi
I'm
right
not
now
doing
on
it.
X,
I'm not doing
see.
It.
But yeah, like, you would be looked at as a martyr like Luigi if y'all do stuff, be responsible with y'all powers. As Uncle Ben said on Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. That's like the whole, that's how you sum up cybersecurity. Because even if you're not doing that, there's so much stuff that you can do that you shouldn't do. That's the whole reason why if we bring it back in the scope of a company with insider threat, there are people, like, for example, if you work on a messaging team, if you wanted to, you could go through and just look at what people talk about in the emails. But it's unethical. Like, the only time that's needed is when 9 times out of 10 is like there's an investigation going on or something suspicious. Like the last episode I talked about, I was like, I had to look through these people's emails because of this chain of what was happening with this payment and this email hijack situation inside the email thread. So stuff like that is warranted. Yeah. And that's also why you had the disclaimer every time you boot your computer on, hey, all contents on this computer belong to XYZ company.
Yeah.
And people don't, you know, they don't pay attention to that. They just do and say whatever they do when they at work. And I'm like, I wouldn't do that if I was you. So I don't know. I thought that was pretty interesting.
I have old school versus new school tech mindset. So this has kind of been something on my mind for a while because I feel like sometimes in corporate environments, mm-hmm. you can experience, especially if you're younger, you can experience that ageism where your age is constantly being questioned, your skill set and things like that. And I think that obviously we know times have changed. So on the old school side of the house, what I have down is it's more hands-on hustle. So you break stuff, actually. You're physically breaking stuff and you're fixing it. There isn't a shortcut. Back in the day, there were no shortcuts, really. A lot of people have respect for the fundamentals. So networking, think about servers, coding, really starting that security from scratch. Now, one thing that I feel like old school did well was gatekeeping. And the reason why I say that is that knowledge wasn't always shared freely. You had to earn the right to learn or to be close with these people, right? It was frowned upon to be nerdy socially. You feel what I'm saying? Socially, yeah. Speaking. It's not a bad thing, but...
No, I was going to interject right there real quick before you finish. As I was getting my cut earlier, my barber was talking about the same thing. He was like, man, he was saying how he ran into an old classmate, and they was like, you know, pretty much a good person. People used to tease them how they walked, but they were smart, they did their work. He was like, bro, all the nerds and all them dudes, they were talking nerds back then, they the people who are running stuff and got something going on now.
That part.
All them fake jocks and cool people have nothing going on.
Nathaniel.
So if you're getting picked on, just keep doing your work.
Do your big one. Do your big one for sure. And then it was a lot of manual versus automation, you know, on the old school side as well. So do it the hard way. That was like a badge of armor that you got to wear because I did this from scratch. I did it the hard way and I figured it out. If you couldn't subnet by hand back in the day, they probably was laughing at you, right? We don't need to
subnet now.
We don't do that. But I'm saying today we got calculators. You can Google it. You AI. Can chat GPT. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of different tools available. Now, on the new school, and the new school tech mindset is access over gatekeeping. So you can literally learn anything you want from anywhere you want. YouTube, TikTok, LinkedIn, Udemy, MeasureUp, UCertified. Like, you name all these different platforms that you can use to grow your education. You also have, like, this abstraction, automation and abstraction component to it as well, where everything is a GUI, and that's the difference. everything was not a GUI back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Today, for sure. Everything is a GUI. It's a GUI everywhere. We got APIs.
Do you want to explain them what GUI is?
Graphical User Interface. So the best way that I try to explain this when I'm talking to teaching my students is that, you know, when you open up a command prompt, right, that is not a GUI. Why? Because you can only use your keyboard to navigate in your system. A GUI allows you to use your mouse. And that's like the way I describe it. So,
and it has actual graphics.
Exactly. It's more user friendly if you're not technical.
Yeah. I think, hey, GUIs are DEI.
Yeah. Can you please?
That would probably be a good title.
That is a good title. That eats.
I'm going to see if that works.
New School also believes in community learning. So we got boot camps, Discords, and you have creators who are all making this content extremely accessible versus what it was in the past. In the past, you had to show somebody that you was worthy of even being their mentor or mentee before they took you on as, you know, that role. And then we also have speed versus depth. Now, sometimes folks are, we talked about this time after time, they're chasing certifications over true understanding. Just because you pass the Security Plus does not mean that you're ready for the job. And I'm saying that because you can go find you a brain dump or some, you know, some something to just help you pass, but do you really know how to answer these questions and have these conversations and what these concepts mean in action? So I think that old school and new school is clashing when it comes to our work ethic and our efficiency. Old heads see shortcuts as laziness, right? Mm-hmm. New heads see them as being more innovational. Then we have egos versus collaboration. One side says, we built this. The other side says, well, we're making it better. And then we have a big knowledge transfer gap. The experience isn't getting passed down enough, and I know this to be true, is because you'll see, for example, let's say we have a company and all of our engineers are about to retire. Why are we in that predicament? And we know why are we in that predicament? Why? That makes no sense to me. So now we're going to bring in these fresh students, and we're not pushing them together. We're teaching the fresh students who are going to replace them a whole new curriculum when these guys have been doing it, but we didn't put them together in order to help them get them upskilled. So things like that, I 100% agree. So I say this all to say that we need both in the room. One of them has helped build the foundation, and then the new folks are really there to help push that foundation forward, to be more innovative, to be more curious, based upon what we're seeing today. Old school, you need to mentor more. You need to adapt to modern tools. New school, you need to master the fundamentals, not just the buzzwords. Everyone needs to be curious, and everyone needs to be humble to continue learning together. Tech will continue to change daily, but your mindset also has to change too. At the end of the day, it's not really about old versus new. It's about real versus fake. Can you solve problems? Can you think critically? Can you keep up when the system updates? Can you hop into command prompt if you need to?
Right. I mean, all those things are, it goes back, we make this analogy a lot of times, but I think it's not just work. We see this everywhere.
No, it's not.
If I go to sports and I'm watching sports, I'm like, these dudes don't do the basics well. I love boxing. I'm watching somebody box that's physically gifted and talented.
Like someone older or younger?
It doesn't matter who it is. They could be around a little bit younger than me, and I'm like, bro, throw the jab. Like, work everything off your jab. If you do what the old champions did in the past, and you'll be good. And they don't do it. They don't run. That's a fundamental, hey, do your road work. It's not just because you can go run a treadmill. You need to go run outside. It's just different. It's a mental thing. A lot of them just don't do the regular stuff. Like you said, if they're skipping, all the knowledge that, fun fact, at Goldman Sachs, there was this guy that had been there, what, 20, maybe like 20 plus years, maybe longer. He knew everything, but it wasn't anywhere that you could find his information that he knew.
So you had to get close. You had to get close with him, and he had to like you for him to share
that with
you.
It wasn't even that. It was just he knew all the stuff, but nobody ever took the time down to say, hey, how about you start putting some documentation down for this stuff you know about this process? So that made it tough. And this is what happens when you go into companies and there are big migrations and projects, and it's all more, these people have the knowledge, but it's not anywhere. So it slows down how fast you can move.
Or even the team can grow and expand and be successful together. Yeah. I think if you are the person on the team that's been there for a while and you see someone new coming in, I always think that it's kind of you to welcome that person in and ask them what they need help with, or even help them be like, hey, I've been doing this for 20 years. My advice to you would be to do this over the next 30, 60, 90 days or something of that sort. Obviously, you might get that from your leadership, but it will speak to your character. Like, it's just a good skill set to have in this industry to not be the one to let your teammates struggle. I mean, and I'm not talking about doing their job for them by any means.
And then I was going to go back. There are most companies, and if y'all still with us right now, I want you to think about this at your own job. A lot of companies only have progression plans for you. It's like your job, but it's nothing to say, hey, in 2 years you'll be at, you know, senior level. 5 years you'll be principal. And then these are the couple of routes you can go based on your experience, what you can do in the company, because we would love to retain you. They do not plan to retain the talent, and that's why you have all these issues with companies aren't really hiring people that don't know zero anymore.
They're not.
So then when the people who know everything leave, you can't find a replacement because you haven't helped them out in the workplace. So now,
or even when you bring the replacements in, you're not meshing the people that are about to be replaced with the people that are replacing the people that are about to be replaced. And that's important because, yeah, you can teach me, but they're actually doing it.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I know, like, fun enough, like, I was talking to a recruiter the other day, and they were recruiting for a role that's been open for a year. And in my mind, I was like, y'all don't got nobody good enough on y'all team to promote to this role?
Apparently not.
They didn't even probably ask. Like, it would be much cheaper to promote them versus spending a year.
Yeah.
And then backfilling that. Like, it's just a whole bunch of stuff. Like, that's why you start seeing people not be successful at certain things. So, I don't know. I think we had an impasse? Mm-hmm. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Let me double check. I like to
look. I was about to look. I was finna ride with it. You said it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I hate my pet peeves on podcasts when they be letting people say stuff and use stuff out of context. They be pissing me off. I think I spelled that right. Is it? Nah.
What are you trying to say? What was the word?
I think I said it right, or I might be saying it the wrong way.
Wait, what was it?
Oh, yeah, so I'm right. Impasse, a situation in which no progress is possible, especially because of disagreement, deadlock, whatever. So.
Oh, I was spelling it wrong. I just looked.
Yeah, yeah. At first, I thought it was EMP.
I was definitely putting the E in there.
But yeah, that's where I think we're at. Like, everybody feel a certain way about this, the hiring, the all the different things with the AI, it's just a mess. So we really are at a corporate impasse, and people are not going to feel the ramifications of it until it's too late. That's what I see from this.
Yeah.
And while we're even talking about work, I think this goes great into what you were just talking about with old school and new school. And I like X now. X has all these like trending topics and stuff like that. So you can literally just go to search and see some
X.
Yeah. And you just start seeing what's cool, and I feel like it's a pulse of what's going on.
We gonna really call it X?
Yeah.
I know.
DMX.
I hate X, though.
A theory of mine is that social media has completely broken the mind of Gen Z and millennials when it comes to work. Their whole lives, they have been told to pursue college, work really hard at their 9-to-5 job, go above and beyond for their boss, then save some income to hopefully purchase a home and family one day. All the people who follow this path are now watching their savings crumble away due to inflation. Home ownership feels out of reach like never before. Then they turn over and look at the 21-year-olds making millions of dollars posting content on YouTube and TikTok. They are able to live with freedom, not beholden to a corporation, while also getting paid enough to afford everything they want. I'm gonna interject at the 21-year-old part because sometimes when you put stuff like that as a blanketed statement, it's not too many people that's that old making millions of dollars.
Millions is crazy.
On YouTube and TikTok. There's a few.
Yeah.
When you start doing the numbers. And so that's what people got to be careful of when they are trying to compare themselves to a Speed, a Casanat, all the people in AMP, all these guys, they're like, when you think about it, AMP, I don't know how many members it is, but let's say, for instance,
it's like six of them.
Say it's six. So that's six people out of however many, whatever that demographic is. Or we talk about RDC. Like, I remember when RDC first started off almost like 10 years ago, probably longer than that. And it took them forever to get to where they at. Like, yeah, now they're making money from DreamCon and the live streams they're doing, and they've been making money for the skits or whatever, but they put in a lot of work to do that. So I also don't like it based because we make content, and I've been doing content just about this for 5 years, and it's not easy.
No, it's not.
It's not easy at all. I mean, it's easy to make the react content, but so I just want to interject right there.
No, but let's stay here. Mm-hmm. I think that is the thing that is going to hurt people, because you're still being told to go to college. And I'm a college advocate. I think everybody should go, but it ain't for everybody. But I think that it's just sad. It's sad to know that you worked your butt off for these 4 years and you might struggle to find a job for two or more, especially if you start the job searching process when it's time to graduate.
But also, to go back in the way you're talking about, what's the difference between them seeing the streamers versus when I was seeing dudes that was like a little bit older than me be rappers or whatever, and they was making millions of dollars. It was only a few of them. That's why I always knew, hey, that's not realistic. You got to...
But, I mean, we were still... I mean, they weren't streamers for us. They were YouTubers, but they probably were making...
No, I'm not even talking about YouTubers. I'm talking about just rappers, celebrities.
Well, I'm talking about... Gen Z, you know, with the whole social media, I'm going to make money, I want to do this off social media. I feel like the thing is that we didn't know how much money people was making on YouTube, the YouTubers. The YouTubers weren't telling us.
But that's because they really weren't back then.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So it wasn't, we was on them. We was on YouTube. We was watching the videos. We was doing all of that. But it wasn't so monetized. And so... once it became monetized, one, and two, people started talking about how much money they're making, then it became lucrative.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's still lucrative. If I bring up the stats about like influencers and social media, like
it is. Especially if you're doing it right.
I mean, some people don't have that's like a subjective thing, because like I said, there's some people that do number.
Well, by right, I mean you're consistent with it. You a full-time content creator. Like when you, that's the life that you live in.
Yeah, but I mean here's the thing though. There are so many people I've seen struggle streaming, not getting views, not good at that, not investing in that. A lot of them people are not going to be good at it anyway. These same people wouldn't even be good in life because they take the same qualities that make them average in life on YouTube or wherever thing they on. So it really don't matter. But let me finish it and then we can talk about some more. People see this and start questioning themselves. Money doesn't feel real in an economy where there is so much bifurcation between the have and the have-nots. The point of a job becomes meaningless. You fail to find purpose in your life anymore. And while these millionaires are the outliers, their content is the one that shows up in your feed over and over again. It is truly detrimental to society, and I'm not sure anyone has a real solution to fix it. So, this is funny because it's a meme talking about me getting dressed to go to work. When there's an 8-year-old YouTuber that made $26 million last year. Like,
it's the Nike tech for me. Yeah.
But I think here's the issue, though. Social media. A lot of these kids are not outside touching grass.
No, people and kids. Nobody. Okay, I'm not saying nobody. That's dramatic. Yeah. But you get what I'm saying. People are not doing things... The things that we find joyful involve forms of technology in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but I think, like I said, a lot
of... Or social media. I'm not going to say technology. Social media.
Gen Z is a generation that just grew up strictly with social media. I noticed the thing. Most of the stuff started in the pandemic. A lot of these kids who were young are now probably adults now they learned about men and women dynamics from social media, not realizing that's not real.
Mm-hmm.
They are saying stuff to either pander to this way to get paid or sway you to that way to get paid. It's not real. Like, people getting chose in real life. You getting fat people, big people, ugly people, people with no hands, one leg, everybody getting chose somewhere. But echo chambers and what everybody's talking about on social media, permeates through the young kids' mind because they don't have enough life experience to know that this is not real.
Mm-hmm. And I was just about to say that same thing. Even us, you know, being creators, I think we see plenty of stuff that people think is legitimate, but we know it's not legitimate.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's also confusion on what is legitimate versus what is not legitimate.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for sure. But you've seen, funny enough, that China is passing something that's going to start making
people. Oh, I did. I reposted that on my story.
I know I like it or something. But yeah, they're going to make people, okay, cool. You say you got all this money, prove it.
Or no, it was you have to have a degree in order to talk about certain topics or something like that.
Yeah.
Which I ain't mad at because I got my degree.
Yeah. No, I think it's good because anybody, that's the one thing that will get you on YouTube. Like I said, people on YouTube use the same stuff people use that do MLMs. Like it's a guy in my text line right now that's been bothering me about trying to come to an event. I already know that their office is like right over there. Mm-hmm. I know exactly where it is. And they called me the other day while I was on the way to do something. And Buddy was like, what did he say? He was like, yeah, man, we just invite you to an event that's about financial literacy and yada, yada, yada. And we're not trying to recruit you. You know, if it's a fit, we'll do something. I'm like, bro, I'm good. I already told y'all that's not what I'm on. And he's like, we partner with companies like Fidelity and stuff like that. I was like, the people that work at those companies are making the money, not y'all. And they was like, oh, we the money team. Because I hear them being coached in the background. And I'm like, in my mind, if you have to say you're the money team,
you is not the money team.
You're not Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot. But I plan to have fun some more. I've already found him on LinkedIn. I know exactly what crew he's with PHP. And whenever I get some time, I'm going to text him like, yo, you under Ken at PHP? Who you under? And then it's going to like start dunning on him. I'm like, I'm the one troll, but I'm going to try to educate you. Because I'm like, if you want to sell insurance, make money, I got friends that's in that actual industry that do not recruit, and I can help you want to make money a legit way.
Yeah.
You make more money actually doing the right thing versus trying to recruit people and not make money at all.
I don't understand. I don't mess with all of that foolishness. Yeah. I want you to talk about the H-1B. I think that would be a good one.
Yeah. So where is it? So, guys, if you are unfamiliar that, you know, with the H-1B talks of Trump making it be, like, I think, $100,000 to retain H-1Bs.
I think it was more than that. It was $200,000. I could be lying. But I thought the number was big.
But anyway, Canada makes another run at luring top tech talent from the U.S. And essentially what they're going to do is undercut whatever the H-1B price is to take all them guys and bring them to Canada. Canada is hoping to poach top tech talent from the U.S. with the new accelerated immigration program for H-1B visa holders, even as it reels back the number of new temporary residents allowed into the country. The U.S. offers H-1B visas to foreign workers with highly specialized skills, 65% of whom worked in tech as of 2023. In September, U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order to impose U.S. $100,000 fee on businesses looking to hire a foreign worker under the program as part of his America First agenda, arguing foreign talent was displacing American workers. Prime Minister Mark Carney was quick to seize the potential opportunity for Canada to lure those workers north and promised the budget would include a clear offering to those who U.S. visas might not get renewed. These are people who have lots of skills that are enterprising and they're willing to move to work, Carney said at a September press conference in London. And let's see, I'm trying to get into the more important stuff. In reality, the people who are in the U.S. are very keen to stay in the U.S. and get their green card, said Andreas Pelinder, founding partner of Borders Law Firm in Toronto. In 2023, Ottawa launched a similar program as part of a tech talent strategy, offering open work permits to H-1B visa holders living in the U.S. Though the program reached its cap of 10,000 applicants within 48 hours, only 1,600 applicants on a new work permit actually arrived in Canada between August 2023 and December 2024, according to the data, the logic obtained from the Federal Immigration Department. When it's time to actually come into Canada and make a whole move to a new country, they did it. And let's see. It's a lot of this. So, what is this? Immigration Department officials said they hope to learn from that experience when designing the new program proposed in Tuesday's budget, which is part of the government's plan to attract top talent from abroad while establishing more sustainable immigration levels. McCall Scooter, I don't know how you say this, Scooterwood, an economics professor at the University of Waterloo, has long argued that a less convoluted immigration system would eliminate the need for special programs like the one set out in the budget for H-1B holders, because Canada will easily be able to skim the best and brightest immigration candidates from a ranked list of applicants. We talk about uncertainty on the business investment side, which is a huge problem. We're doing the exact same thing on this kind of immigration side, creating a massive amount of uncertainty for people that's totally unnecessary, he said. The move was lauded, however, by tech industry groups like Council of Canadian Innovators and Build Canada, an organization of tech leaders launched earlier this year to influence government policy, which pitched the idea in September as a way to attract global talent and stave off attempts by U.S. firms trying to poach Canadians. The government said the goal is to reduce the number of temporary residents to less than 5% of the population and to restrict new permanent residents to less than 1%. The Liberal government also hopes to make sure that more of those new permanent residents arrive through the economic immigration programs to help spur growth. So that's that. I thought that was pretty interesting. I would like to go deeper and see, like, what are they actually – let me see if I can find it. What are they actually proposing the cost? Because I know Canada is – well, parts in Canada cost more than the U.S.
I think that the visa stuff always tugs on my heartstrings, because I've had – a few coworkers who lost their citizenship, you know, and that people got families, kids, and it's just it's a big ordeal. So I just wanted to highlight that, because everybody ain't a U.S. citizen, and you got to figure out what's going to be best for you and your family. So Canada might be the move. I have University of Pennsylvania. They had a data breach. So the University of Pennsylvania confirmed that hackers stole university data in a cyber attack discovered on October 31st. Initially dismissed as fraudulent, the university later admitted that the systems related to development and alumni activities were compromised. Hackers sent offensive emails from official at upenn.edu accounts to alumni and staff, claiming responsibility and mocking the school for violating federal law. FERPA. The breach occurred through a social engineering attack, likely phishing, which allowed access to Penn's internal systems. Though Penn enforced MFA, insiders reported that some high-ranking officials were exempt, creating possible weak spots. The university has not disclosed how many people were affected, what specific data was taken, or when victims will be notified. However, reports suggest stolen files may include donor records, banking transactions, and personal information. The hackers' messages hinted at financial motives and resentment towards affirmative action and legacy admissions, mirroring a similar 2004 Columbia University breach that exposed nearly 870,000 records. Penn says it has locked down compromised systems and is cooperating with authority while continuing its investigation. So, two things there. Those exceptions to MFA, remove them. If you are on the identity team at your job, have a discussion with your admin and just ask them, do we happen to have any users that are exempted from MFA? Maybe we should take a look and get that list updated, because there are folks that slip through, and sometimes it's because they were doing some testing or whatever the case may be, but they forgot to go back in. But nobody should be exempt in 2025.
Yeah, I mean, GRC. And so while you're doing that, I said, let me find some of these emails. And one of them said, "Dear Penn community, the University of Pennsylvania is a dog shit elitist institution full of woke R words. We have terrible security practices and are completely unmeritocratic. We hire and admit morons because we love legacies, donors, and unqualified affirmative action admits. We love breaking federal laws like FERPA, all your data will be leaked, and Supreme Court rulings like SFFA. Please stop giving us money. Warm regards." That's funny. Let me see if it's anybody else.
That's so embarrassing.
Yeah, so I'm trying to see if there's any other different ones that came out. Because everybody shared that same one.
That is embarrassing as what's the person that's over the school called?
The president?
Yeah, that's embarrassing. Like, extremely embarrassing. Because not only did this happen, but you have these emails going out. And they're coming from inside the company is awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah, I thought I wanted to talk about something a little bit more funnier that people can laugh at. It's really a question. Did you know that people try to use LinkedIn as a dating site?
Yes.
And
yes.
And the context behind this was that I was telling you earlier I was going to send my friend's LinkedIn to my little brother, and I happened to take her LinkedIn and send it to her. I was like, you got to update this, because it's from when her picture's from when she graduated grad school, which was last decade. And she's like, I'm never on there or whatever. And so a couple of days passed, and then she sent me this TikTok. She's like, I'm sending this to you because this reminded me of what you was talking about just now. She said, I thought you would find it funny. And so I'm going to play the TikTok, and then we're going to talk about this, and maybe people can leave their comments about if they experienced this.
And we don't ask women for their Instagram no more. If you see that woman, you think she look good, rather than saying, yo, what's your gram? It's, hey, what's your LinkedIn?
Can you please?
And then from there, instead of doing Instagram and FaceTime, it's, hey, what's your availability on Google Calendars? Let's meet on a Zoom. Let's meet on a Google Meets. Be different. None of that. What's your gram? What's your FaceTime? Nah, you elegant now, gang. Upgrade. Jesus loves you. I love you. You have a blessed rest of your day.
I'm screaming. But I feel like that is... That if you're not at a social event where it's appropriate to ask for something, I mean, I'm not saying there's a time and a place, but like you're not finna pull up on a girl in the club asking for her LinkedIn.
I can see how this could be a good strategy if you ain't trying to talk to a bum and you're trying to see, hey, what's she do? So yeah. I can see like where the benefit of that, but however, you're taking it too far when you're trying to put people time on people's calendar and use it as Tinder.
He was better off not making that video and just doing it.
I think he was being funny with it. But,
no, I get it.
But when I type in, so she was like, wait, people be doing LinkedIn like that? I was like, yes. And I had sent her some posts where I was like, women real deal come on here and say, hey, this is not a dating site. So yeah, this woman said, LinkedIn isn't a dating app, and I promise I didn't download it for small talk. That's one. But this other one says, let me be clear. PSA, LinkedIn is not a dating site. Last night, a guy reached out to me here on LinkedIn just to talk. I responded politely, reminding him that LinkedIn is a professional networking platform, not a dating app. Despite that, he told me I had a cool vibe and asked for my phone number this morning. He mentioned again, asking if I was single, married, or involved.
That's outrageous.
Let me be clear. This is not okay. LinkedIn is for connecting with professionals, learning, collaborating, and growing careers, not for personal or romantic advances. Now... I always tell people words mean something. Unwanted personal inquiries make people uncomfortable and undermine the integrity of professional networking. If this happens to you, don't engage further, block and report the account, protect your personal boundaries. Your professionalism deserves respect. Now, I disagree with her with reporting the account. Just block them.
Yeah.
I don't think you got to get somebody's LinkedIn account taken away because they were trying to shoot at you. However, there's a thing called reading the room, women and fellas. Don't try to shoot a half-court jumper when you hadn't even made a layup yet.
Yeah, and then if they're being, what's it called? You come back again, you're doing it again. Like she said, he sent her two messages, and then that two turned into three turned into four. What's the word? You're being consistent with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's, it does make you uncomfortable as a woman because you can't cut into them like you could if it was offline, right? Like, if you didn't know my professional history.
Right. Now, while I'll flip that, I do tell people when I'm reviewing their LinkedIn, I tell them your LinkedIn should be your professional Tinder.
What does that mean?
You want recruiters to swipe right on your profile.
You do.
And email you. That's what you want. If you're not getting emailed about jobs before, like, you have to go apply to it, your LinkedIn trash. If you're on Tinder and ain't nobody swiping right, your Tinder is trash. It's the same thing. And I only say that because the same principles, because this woman, she says, does anyone feel like being an unemployed person on LinkedIn is a bit too similar to being on a dating app? And she was like, create your profile. It's funny. Create your profile and be sure to highlight your best-selling points. Look through hundreds of other profiles to see if they match what you're looking for and believe that you're going to be noticed for your talents and personality, not just your assets. Get your best 30-second pitch. Trust, you're not being catfished by fake accounts. Share your contact info, schedule some one-on-ones, chat with some potential suitors, wishing on everything holy that you don't say something stupid or awkward and ruin your chances. Patiently wait for the next message in hopes of being asked out again or quietly navigate a rejection and determine which new app to try next time. 5, you advance to the commitment phase, so after 4 to 6 dates, hope that you're the one. Now, don't get me wrong, in every other aspect of my life, I would never wait on someone else to determine my future. But in today's dating pool, it can feel like we don't have any other option but to remain on standby. Job searching is tedious and tiring work, but my goal today is to remind you that you are the perfect match for that admirer and to be patient with the process. So I thought that was pretty funny. But that's literally how you have to approach it, to be honest. That's why I tell people, have a decent...
No, it actually needs to be more than decent. You can't have a decent profile because there are millions of decent profiles out there.
Well, when I say decent, I mean like their picture needs to at least be decent. I'm not saying they got to have a professional headshot.
Well, no, I'm just...
This wall back here, wide enough for
no, I'm just iPhone saying like, even in terms of the content on your page, if you can tell that you did that real quick and you didn't really sit down and you weren't intentional, and because it's your brand. How do you want to be known, right?
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. That's why a lot of people reach out to like, hey, man, how did you get all these followers? I need help being, get brands and branding myself like that as well. So, like, how do I do it? And I got some coming for that specifically for the coaching peeps. I got some for them. I think you next.
Let's see. I think that was all mine.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
You didn't do L3 here?
Yeah, I'm going to wait for that one. I think I have a couple of other ones that are actually being cool. Because I believe wasn't this past week Amazon did the layoffs?
Yeah, child.
And so.
I thought it was a joke. Like, I literally thought people was like, I was like, wait, is this the truth?
Yeah. This was on November 3rd. This article came out. But it said Amazon CEO Andy Jassy says the recent layoffs of 14,000 people was about culture.
How many people?
14,000.
Why was people saying 30?
I don't know. Who knows? I know there was one thing.
I literally heard. That's why I was like, that's not real.
They might have increased it. I didn't see 30. I just typed in Amazon tech layoffs.
And I'm not saying that. I mean, 14 is still a lot. I'm just saying I thought it was 30.
Yeah. But Amazon hired a lot during the pandemic, so they still been trying to right size. But,
I feel like it's also, they got to be more specific with what, like, Amazon's a huge company. Like, that could be across.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a lot, though. I'm going to read it and see what they say. They said it's about culture and not financially or AI-driven, which I think is a lie.
I did see that.
I totally think that's a crack of beans. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy addressed the company's recent layoffs during his quarterly earnings call on October 30th, saying the decision to cut 14,000 corporate positions was based on cultural factors rather than financial or AI-related reasons. In the words of the illustrious Floyd Mayweather, I want you to take out a big knife. What'd he say? Yeah, that's what he said. I want you to take a big knife and cut out the BS. Because... we know for a fact that is not true. Everybody's following the wave of investing in AI. The announcement that we made a few days ago was not really financially driven, and it's not even really AI driven. Not right now, at least, he said during the call. It's culture. The Amazon layoffs, which largely affected middle management, followed a June 2025 memo, according to a previous Fortune report. In it, Jassy said that advancements in AI have increased efficiency across the company. In a separate internal communication, Beth Galati, Amazon Senior Vice President of People Experience and Technology, describes the restructuring as an effort to adjust to the transformative technology of AI. Amazon's workforce has grown significantly in recent years. The company currently employs about 1.55 million people worldwide, including roughly 350,000 in corporate roles.
That's a lot of people.
Reuters reports, in comparison, filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission show that Amazon had 798,000 employees at the end of 2019 per Fortune. So that's what I was talking about. Pandemic, they hired a lot of people. If you go as fast as we did for several years, the size of businesses, the number of people, the number of locations, the type of businesses you're in, you end up with a lot more people than what you had before. And you end up with a lot more layers. He added, sometimes without realizing it, you can weaken the ownership of the people that you have who are doing the actual work and who own most of the two-way door decisions, the ones that should be made quickly and right at the front of the line. Now, I agree because we do know the Amazons, the Netflix, the Metas, all of them, they hired people from their competitors just so they couldn't hire them. So I do know that's true. And they were on TikTok saying, hey, we don't do
that. That's so greedy.
As Afrotech previously reported, Amazon reduced about 14,000 corporate roles on October 28th as part of a broader workforce adjustment. Their move follows similar reductions made across multiple departments beginning in 2023. As the company restructured teams and reevaluated staffing needs in its retail, human resources, and cloud computing divisions. Amazon is among several large companies, including Salesforce, Target, and Paramount, that have announced recent workforce reductions, while some organizations have cited automation and shifting business needs. Data shows that AI-related cuts remain limited. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell noted per Fortune that Central Bank is observing how AI adoption may affect hiring and job stability. A recent Goldman Sachs study found that only 11% of surveyed companies had reduced staff due to AI, while about one-third of firms in the technology, media, and telecommunication industries reported headcount reductions linked to it. During the earnings call, according to Fortune, Jassy said the company intends to remain efficient and adaptable in changing business environments. Now, I don't think it's totally about AI. I think they did overhire a lot. There probably were people that weren't doing work, but we also know, and like I said, internally you would know, hey, did some of these people say they didn't want to come into office? Were they forced to have bad reports of saying they weren't actually doing well, even though they probably were? So it may be a lot of that as well that's going on with some of these people that, you know, of course, they aren't speaking on.
Yeah.
But it sucks. I did hear they was going to get decent severances. But honestly, if I was the president, I would push for corporate jobs for our salaries to be guaranteed like the NBA. No matter what happens, if y'all fire me, I get all my money.
For the year?
Yeah, unless it's a clause that I did something that, you know,
violates
I can't
get
out myself
yet.
But everything else, if I get laid off, I should get my whole contract paid out and my bonus paid at 150%.
Ooh, 150 is cute.
Yeah, that's when your company doing good. And we say, yeah, you know, you got that and we did this. Here you go. So, I don't know. That's what I would say on that. But that reminded me, like, for people that know the Job Father, he had a video on TikTok where he was talking about if he just got laid off. And I actually want to see what he said.
Why do I keep confusing? That's not Gabe.
No.
Okay. Gabe, if you watch it,
Jermaine
this,
is from Toronto.
Ah, okay.
So when I put him on, you're going to hear his Toronto dialect. He has a big following on LinkedIn and X.
I know.
Yo, this is going to be very controversial. I know that some of y'all love your CEOs and your company, so like you get sensitive, but I'm going to say some shit right now. If you have been laid off, if you are ever let go, right, the first thing that you need to do is to shut the fuck up and call an appointment lawyer. There are so many different variables that go off in a layoff and what you are actually entitled to. It varies by country, state by state, province by province, in some cases, city by city. And believe you me, it is in your employer's best interest to give you a shitty offer. They will try to skirt and not give you what you're entitled to quickly. You know, I actually think that one of the downsides of layoffs happening so frequently, as outside of the million of downsides, is that it normalizes it. So, like, there's less heat for when a layoff happens. Like, at my last full-time job when I got laid off, they gave everybody, like, it made the news. It was such bad PR. Everybody was in shock. And like they gave us an amazing benefits pack, like goodbye package, right? I was just there for literally like under a year by a week. And when they let us go, they gave us like full everything that we could have asked for. Plus, they extended our healthcare coverage by like another 6 months. And they allowed me to keep a MacBook Pro that they gave me for my own personal device. And it still had AppleCare on it for a full year after the fact. Now, when a company lays you off, bruh, they don't give a single solitary. So that's why you need to be calling employment lawyers. A lot of people think employment lawyers, you have to pay up front, but a lot of them take commission, right? They don't get paid unless you get paid and you get a proper piece of your severance. And they always, a lot of the good ones, always want to make sure that they aren't wasting their time when they're taking a case. So they will hear you out. And a lot of them will tell you like, yo, this is what your chances are. This is what you're entitled to. And they'll let you know whether or not like you're being shafted. And you know what's a messed up thing? It's the big companies that will actually try to shaft you the most compared to the little ones. Especially if they think they can get away with it. Because like, let's be real, not everyone contacts an employment lawyer. Not everybody wants to go through the litigation process, right? So like, if they can give you 5, 10% less than what you're entitled to, you know what I'm saying? They're going to do it. And that's why there's always pressure for you to sign the severance offer, which is why as soon as you hear it, if you see a weird-ass email or a weird-ass calendar invite on your schedule, the first thing you need to do is call an employment lawyer in your city. Call them. I'm just saying, you want a CYA, cover your ass, because the company certainly did. So like, there's nothing wrong for you to lawyer up, right? If they doing what they're supposed to do, they got nothing to fear, right? Call the lawyer. Yo, this is gonna be
controversial. My only thing with that is that they be giving you a tight time frame to accept that severance.
Yeah.
So it could potentially not be enough time for you to. You know,
it could be, but if you get in contact with a lawyer fast enough, you're going to apply pressure on them. Most companies don't want to go to trial with it, so they will handle it out of court and they'll settle for something because they know. Like, in this economy, like, if you're giving anybody less than 3 months severance, like, you full of it.
It's a lot of people's reality these days.
Because it takes a minute, even with an incredible
network. A minute? It'd be taking people longer.
It take you a long time.
That part right there.
Unless you get with me now. Now, I had a client, he got laid off in June, and when is it now? We're in October, he started his GRC job.
Clock that.
Double the salary.
Oh, he won.
Yes, because he was with the best. But that's neither here nor there. And I think that I had one more funny one. Not funny, but in a sense where, you know, people always think we talk so much about WGU, which I actually have a WGU video say that we're going to do another day. But let's talk about Full Sail University. Now, I don't know too much about Full Sail, but this TikToker does.
So apparently Full Sail University wasn't just selling degrees, they were also selling lies. And somebody on the inside finally snitched. See, when we think for-profit education or college, we already know what the vibes are gonna be. Big promises, big tuition, and graduates walking away with a piece of paper and a whole bunch of debt that's following them like a unpaid Uber ride. But this whistleblower said Full Sail was out here doing what? Inflating jobs numbers. Just straight lying about how many people actually can get jobs after attending Full Sail University. They over there selling dreams like it was Gucci when it was really Sheen. Do you know what that means? The government was cutting checks, students were signing loans, and Full Sail was cashing in. And Full Sail ain't cheap. It was costing anywhere from between $30,000 to almost $100,000 just to get a bachelor's degree. And see, Full Sail was saying that they had 70% of their graduates were able to get jobs. And do you know why? Well, they did that because when you hit that 70% threshold, it allowed them to get mucho government funding to the tune of over $377 million a year. Yep. They lied to get your tax dollars, and they lied to get you on the hook for student loans to go to school, knowing that you would never be able to get a job after that. See, y'all got to understand, when billionaires and corporations do this kind of thing, it's just called business. But when you do it, it's always going to be called fraud. Oh, but that whistleblower report? This was the rare time when somebody on the inside of it actually said, nah, you're not going to keep playing with people's futures like this. And remember, what I'm telling y'all is not a dramatization. This ain't no parody either. It's a true story, unfortunately.
That's crazy.
That's insane. The reason why I say, it's insane, but the reason why I'm saying it's insane is because, for example, like, I've been looking at law schools, and you know, you want to see, like, how are the students doing that graduated from this school. And if you see things that aren't true, you pick this as a school, and it was not a good option. I wonder if they can be sued by students for that.
It's probably, like, some type of class action lawsuit.
Exactly, because that, like, school is expensive for you.
Yeah, that's why a lot of them. Why a lot of them for-profit joints, they end up getting sued just because unrealistic expectations. Like, that's a high number. 70%?
70 is crazy.
70 is high. And you know what I'm saying, guys? It's not WGU. Like I said, it's Full Sail. If you went to Full Sail, leave us a comment below because I didn't know anything about it.
I've heard of it.
I feel like a lot of those scammy schools came into more fruition during the pandemic.
I feel like they've been around since.
They always been around, but I'm saying, like, it was just shoved in your face.
What was that? You're sitting on the couch anyway.
Everest?
Yeah.
Everest Cousins. College, Phoenix, all those types of universities. I had one because I thought it'd be pretty cool to talk about it. It's the remote jobs that will survive layoffs. And I want to see if we actually agree with it. It's 7 remote jobs that will survive the next layoffs. So it says nearly 70% of remote employees work in tech, according to Statista. But as a recent layoff show, even corporate and remote jobs are no longer guaranteed. Amazon is cutting about 14,000 corporate roles, marking one of the largest workforce reductions of 2025. And it says Big M has also eliminated more than 15,000 positions since May. Even so, remote and hybrid work remain popular, with flexible job postings continuing to rise. Yet, fully remote workers face a 35% higher layoff risk than their hybrid or on-site peers, based on an analysis of 2 million white-collar workers by employment data providers. Now, so here are the jobs. The first one is cybersecurity analyst. And it says, when budget tightens, companies don't cut security, they strengthen it. Which I agree.
I do agree with that. I agree with that role.
I agree, but kind of disagree, because I've seen security people recently just get laid off. So I think it depends more so on the industry than necessarily, like, most companies, if you don't have, like, that big of a team.
I'm not mad at them saying that about that title.
Oh, I'm not.
Yeah. Now, other security roles, I can't speak to them. But an analyst is very, and to me, they don't have enough, the companies.
Some people do. That's what I'm saying. Some people are not doing the work. So that's what I'm saying. When you're in a really big company, you got a really big team.
Yeah.
And you're in one of those type of industries where layoffs occur, it's one of them things to look at. When budgets tighten, companies don't cut security, they strengthen it. As businesses shift more operations online during economic downturns, cyber threats multiply. Ransomware attacks, phishing schemes, and data breaches increase when companies are most vulnerable, making cybersecurity analysts essential regardless of economic conditions. And let's see. And it says, so I'm not going to read, like, probably everything, but that's the first one. And then it has an anecdote that says, like, why is layoff proof? Every company with an online presence needs cybersecurity, making these remote jobs critical infrastructure rather than optional expenses. Now, number two, I agree with for sure. Healthcare IT specialists.
I ain't really seen them titles get laid off.
Exactly. The healthcare industry doesn't pause during recessions, and neither does its technology infrastructure. Healthcare IT specialists manage electronic health records, ensure HIPAA compliance, troubleshoot telehealth platforms, and maintain the digital systems that keep medical facilities running. Why it's layoff proof? Healthcare remains essential regardless of the economic conditions, and the technology supporting it requires constant maintenance and expertise. Number three, might be a shocker, accounting and financial analyst.
Not shocked.
During economic uncertainty.
Like Fidelity, or what's the other one here?
Which one? They all here.
What is the blue one, I think? They real big. They campus is huge.
Blue?
Maybe it's not blue.
I mean, you talking about, like, the Big Four?
Yeah.
KPMG?
Nope.
EY PwC.
Mm-mm. They like far out. Dang, I cannot think of it. But I'm saying that to say they're a huge company, and I've not heard them mention layoffs, even Fidelity.
Yeah, they are. But Fidelity a pretty good company.
I can agree with that one.
They say, why is layoff proof? Financial oversight intensifies during downturns, making these remote jobs more valuable when budgets shrink.
If anything, they probably getting a bonus. Yeah.
Technical writer and documentation specialist, which I don't know. I see. As companies streamline operations and reduce headcount, clear documentation becomes critical for maintaining productivity with leaner teams. Technical writers create the manuals, user guides, API documentation, and knowledge bases that allow companies to function efficiently. Man, a lot of companies, you do that stuff yourself when you're working on something new.
Yeah. That's why I'm like, I don't know that to be its own role. I know that to be, like you said.
I know in
some
places you can be a technical writer.
Absolutely.
Why is layout proof? Documentation becomes more valuable when companies operate with reduced staff and need to maintain productivity. The five is insurance agent and risk management consultant.
What was it?
Insurance agent.
Okay.
Protecting assets becomes a higher priority during economic instability.
What is an insurance agent? Like a claims person?
I guess so.
Okay. I mean, I can see that. Yeah. They don't get it.
I think it might be more of insurance people that work with companies more than personal people, I think. I don't know.
Oh, like somebody has their own agency.
Probably. Because, yeah. I mean, like, you know, cyber insurance has actually became a niche area that people can get into if you've worked in insurance.
I actually talked to this guy this year. I don't know where I was at or where I met him, but he has his own agency, and he was just telling me how he told a business that they should get cyber insurance. They said no, they didn't want to. He told them to at least get a smaller policy. They did, and they got compromised. And they had to call him.
Customer success manager, which I kind of feel like
this. I don't agree with that one.
Right. They said not all customer success roles are created equal during layoffs. While luxury brands and discretionary services companies may cut these roles, customer success managers and essential services remain critical. This includes healthcare, software, financial platforms, insurance technology, cybersecurity, and business infrastructure tools. Why is layout proof? Customer retention is essential. Services directly predicts revenue streams and making these remote jobs valuable during budget cuts. They got a point.
They got cut, though.
Yeah.
Across a lot of companies. I know. Like, badly.
I agree. That's what I'm like. I don't know. Like, are they just using straight data? Like, I don't know how recent the data they got from this. Software developer, AI, cybersecurity, and core infrastructure. While many tech jobs face layoff risk, software developers in specific high-priority areas remain in demand. Developers focus on artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and core infrastructure work on system companies cannot afford to neglect, even during economic downturns.
I agree with that. I think, I don't know if it's true, but I do think that if you're a SWE, it might be easier for you to find a role because the roles are always there.
Why is layoff proof? Companies may cut experimental projects, but they tend to retain developers, maintaining critical systems, and building tools that improve efficiency. So it was just talking about, like, making your job remote layoff proof. And I'm like, to be honest, unless you're in certain industries, nothing is just layoff proof.
Nah,
facts. Always have a backup plan. Always stay interviewing. Make sure your LinkedIn profile look good so the recruiters hit you up. Just usually never know because you can been somewhere 15 years, and this is the day, hey, man, gotta let you go.
Yeah. The only thing I think you can do to be layoff proof is to better manage your money and also think about what else you can be doing to bring in some more income.
Or work C2C, so holler at justice.
Period.
I think the last one I want to talk about before we cover voicemail briefly is the L3Harris. I thought that was pretty interesting. It says, how an ex-L3Harris trenchant boss stole and sold cyber exploits to Russia. Peter Williams, the former general manager of Trenchant, a division of defense contractor L3Harris that develops surveillance and hacking tools for Western governments, pleaded guilty last week to stealing some of those tools and selling them to a Russian broker. A court document filed in the case, as well as exclusive reporting by TechCrunch and interviews with Williams, former colleagues explained how Williams was able to steal the highly valuable and sensitive exploits from Trenchant. Williams, a 39-year-old Australian citizen who was known inside the company as Doogie, admitted that prosecutors that he stole and sold 8 exploits or 0 days which are security flaws in the software that are unknown to its maker.
He sold or stole?
It said he sold and stole.
Oh, wow.
Where are we at? Yeah. He stole and sold 8 exploits or 0 days, which are security flaws in software that are unknown to its maker and are extremely valuable to hack into a target's devices.
That's not good.
William said some of those exploits, which he stole from his own company, Trenchant, were worth $35 million, but he only received $1.3 million in cryptocurrency from the Russian broker. William sold the 8 exploits over the course of several years between 2022 and 2025. Thanks to his position and tenure at Trenchant, according to the court document, Williams maintained a super user.
Maintained super user access
to the company's internal access control, multi-factor authenticated secure network, where his hacking tools were stored, and which only employees with the need-to-know access had access to. As a super user, Williams could view all the activity logs and data associated with Trenchant's secure network, including its exploits. The court document notes Williams' company network access gave him full access to Trenchant's proprietary information trade secrets. Now, we are where we're at, where we're supposed to be, with insider threat. For stuff like this, that's that high level, when you talk about like the classification of data, I would consider that to be confidential. An alert is supposed to trigger, like on blue team side, hey, so-and-so just access this or whatever. They're supposed to be notating why they are looking into this. You can't just access stuff like that and look at it all the time. There would have been a trend.
I was just about to say, what do you call it? It's a threshold. It's a threshold that you can set to say, okay, if we see 3 or just throwing a number out there, you just said something. Can you go back like 2 lines that I was...
Super user access?
There we go. I was going to explain what a super user is. Very simply, it's the global... Think about it as a global admin's mom, right? They have more access than the global admin does, and that's not a good thing. It's already not a good thing to have too many GAs, and now we're talking about a super user.
Yeah, it's why you are... When you are...
That's why they should have PIM in place... PIM in place.
Well, PIM is going to be one part of that.
It will help, though.
It could be one part of it.
Because it would be an audit trail, and it would be reports going out.
The audit trail is already there. The thing is detections.
No, that's what I'm saying. It would be ideally, they would have some reports to see, okay, why you do all of that last week? Or
But a lot of these companies, you know, they're so secure that that's why when I say people, like when people work in government type of roles, sometimes so easy, it's so secure. The stuff that they don't think about happen, don't happen. But as my guy Antoine Matthews would say, don't think about a use case, think about the abuse case. This is something that should have been covered in threat modeling. This is where all the different roles come into play.
Yep.
IAM, threat modeling, blue team, IRM. All these different factions come together right here and prevent this type of stuff.
What did we just talk about earlier with Pennsylvania and it being, what account was it? Some high execs.
Yeah, they didn't have MFA.
But those exemptions is what I'm saying. A lot of the time, the people who have those high levels of access, they always have some sort of exemption in place that, oh, it's for testing. Or, oh, I just need to, and you have to.
Yeah. Not only that, like you say, is you have to do audits. Hey, do you still need access to this? Why? How often do you use it? What do you use it for?
But that's why people get mad. He had no business being a super user. Point blank, period. Permanently, it's crazy.
Because something like that, he should have been talked about as a high level.
Permanently is crazy.
But yeah, definitely, there should have been a trail. That's another who polices the police.
Yeah.
So he probably was doing it, and then he probably was doing it at a time of night where, like, it's whoever's on the shift, they're not seeing it.
That insider risk and those policies not in place, because why is you on here outside of work hours if that is abnormal behavior?
Yep. So let's get back to this real quick. Abusing this wide-ranging access, William used a portable. I'm going to just throw this iPad. Abusing this wide-ranging access, because this can't be a defense contractor.
I already got attitude.
This can't be a defense contractor allowing people to connect external hard drives and flash drives to their systems. Williams used a portable external hard drive to transfer the exploits out of the secure networks.
Please.
I know you lying.
Please.
He did it.
That's because he was the super user.
He did it from Trench's offices in Sydney, Australia.
He did it from in-office?
Yeah, and Washington, D.C., and then onto a personal device at that point. William sent the stolen tools via encrypted channels to Russian broker protocol. This, DLP, data loss prevention,
no,
right here.
No, all of that is bad. And he was in office. Bye. They don't have no DLP at the network level.
I ain't going to lie, though. If I get hit up for that insider role, I'm going to talk about this right here. I'm going to bring up this exact use case. As a former Trenton employee with knowledge of the company's internal IT systems told TechCrunch that Williams was in the very high echelon of trust within the company as part of the senior leadership team, which you were talking about earlier. Williams had worked at the company for years, including prior to L3 Harris acquisition of Azimuth and Linchpin Labs, two sister startups that merged into Trenchant. He was, in my opinion, perceived to be beyond reproach, said the former employee, who asked to remain anonymous as they were not authorized to speak about their work at Trenchant. No one had any supervision over him at all. He was kind of allowed to do things the way he wanted to. Another former employee, who also asked not to be named, said that the general awareness is that whoever is the general manager would have unfettered access to everything. Before the acquisition, Williams worked at Linchpin Labs, before then at Australian Signal Directorate, the country's intelligence agency tasked with digital and electronic eavesdropping, according to the cybersecurity podcast Risky Business. Sarah Band, spokesperson for L3 Harris, did not respond to the request for comment. Okay, this is a long article, and y'all can read the rest of it. That just sums it up, that it's just crazy that he had, like, all this access, and they try to bring stuff over. The defense contractors try to handle the digital systems like it's the military, and I think that's where they mess up at. And I just, for the life of me, do not understand why you let people connect external drives, flash drives, log onto their personal cloud storage.
Connect it and extract some data?
Yeah.
Bye.
It'd have been automatically unusable the time you plugged it into the device.
It should have immediately. Somebody should have been like, hey, man, what you doing?
Because I could see if it was a little stick set, he used a
company. No, for his role.
No, you know what?
For his role and his permission, clearly he is being excluded from.
Well, no, I'm going to say when we work for TSA, if somebody wanted to use a hard drive or flash drive or something like that, it had to be one that was TSA approved that they pretty much had.
Got
their
stuff from, on. Yeah.
But even then, certain stuff is just not supposed to be. Because if you ask them, all you have to do is say, hey, man, what you doing with that?
Yeah.
That's literally what you have to do and ask them. So, I don't know, man. This was actually a pretty interesting one. People stay doing stupid things. Like, we might have a new segment called Job Workers Do the Stupidest Things. Like, that's what the segment is going to be. But before we get out of here, somebody left us a voicemail. All right, here we go. Yeah, they left it on the 27th. All right, so we about to respond to one voicemail, and then we're going to let y'all get back to y'all day.
I'm calling in with a question inspired by Atomic Habits by James Clear. So in IT auditing and CMMC, organizations often focus on passing the audit instead of building ongoing habits of compliance. How can we shift the mindset from checklist compliance to developing daily habits that naturally support security maturity?
It's funny because that lines up what we just was talking about.
It do.
I think it comes from the top down of saying, hey, this shouldn't be checkboxes. We need to make sure that what we are checkboxing works.
Yep. And also, it's easier said than done, for real. It's extremely easier said than done. I think that everybody gets scary about those audits, and there's always something that the auditor is saying to do, but the company is saying, well, that don't really, it's not really a big deal to us.
Really the whole thing of the audits and everything needs to actually be revamped, because you have the people who are doing the audits that don't even understand what they audited.
Clock that right there. Clock that part right there. So if you tell them, oh, well, we don't have this in place because of these other mitigations, they don't even get it. They're, to them, not in place.
Yeah.
Fail.
Exactly. So that's why, and that goes back to even what AJ was talking about, like, hey, it's like SOC 2 is outdated. It was last updated in, 2018 or something?
Ooh.
Or 2019, whatever it was, but it's outdated so far. He's like, it needs to be updated to make sense for a business to actually be SOC 2 compliance. It's like, it don't really mean nothing if it's, you are pretty much being audited on stuff that's evolved in those years. But I think that's how we got to get mature. The audits have to go one through the checkbox and then say, hey, did I see this actually being used correctly?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can tie the audits, and this is when you use the metrics and everything else from, like, your security team and see all these things that these controls are put in place. What if they thwarted? And then that's how you can build the bridge and say, okay, they got these controls, and based on their security incidents, all their controls are working as intended. that's how I would say I would make it make sense when it came to auditing and also what the stuff is in place and is it working?
Yeah.
So you could have a breach, but if you're one of your things was always my fun thing is talking about conditional access. If we implement a conditional access, we see, hey, yeah, this person's password was compromised. However, when this other person tried to log in, they were not able to access any of our company's assets because we have conditional access to only let company provided assets access company infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And if they see that, it's like, okay, that works.
Yeah.
That's literally how you do it. But you got to understand why.
You got to understand is the big piece. Why?
Yeah, I like that question, Asher. I appreciate you for asking us that question. I know we're short on it, but it was really like a simple answer for me. And stuff like that makes me say, "Who we're going to have another theme, and let's actually draw out what we would do to fix compliance and how we do this and how do we look at these requirements for auditors and kind of go there." But, no, it's been a fun episode. You got anything you want to leave them with today?
I do. It's a lot of craziness that's going on in the world these days. So be kind to people. People are out here struggling, having a hard time. So if you can extend some grace, if you can extend some assistance or support to your community members, please feel free to do so. We are in some turbulent times, and we are better together than we are apart. That's my little spiel of the day. What you got for the people?
Instead of me saying it, this is what I'm going to just leave y'all with. And y'all should know the movie. I shouldn't even have to say it.
All right.
Fuck down, eat on, aunts eat.
Can you please? You love that clip.
Hey, and we're going to see y'all next week. It's been another episode of Textual Talk, man. Y'all enjoy y'all weekend. We're going to enjoy ours. And we out.